One thing that I say to people that are friends of mine when I have talked about the podcast over the years, and one of their things is this something that people talk about, or is this something that people are interested in? And for the longest time, I thought no. But one thing that I've learned about doing such a niche podcast is that there are circumstances and people out there in all walks of life that are more or less just like you and just like me and just like the other people that listen to this podcast. And all of our stories are unique. And sometimes your pain journey and your pain story is not necessarily chronic physical pain, but sometimes it is heavy emotional pain and trauma. Let's talk about it. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. It is Thursday, as you listen to this, it is Thursday, September the 11th, day of mourning in the United States, quite certainly. The 24th anniversary of 9/11 and the terrorist attacks. Thank you for being here. This is a returning guest, but before I get into that, I want to make sure that I thank the patrons of the podcast. And actually, gosh, I didn't even have it up. There is a new patron just since the last time that I recorded. I recorded that episode last week. I talked about the, it sounds so, again, I'm having a difficult time saying that it is a near death experience, but that is certainly how I feel. And actually, I just made a doctor appointment for Monday because I am still having a little bit of residuals from choking incident last week. And just want to make sure everything's good. It might be a thing where I need to go just see a therapist and we'll deal with that when it comes. But new is Carolyn. So thank you for being here. But there's also, this is just the screen name, I think, Red Fire Phoenix 25, Leslie, Justin, Mary, Teresa, Albert, Jeff, Julie, Deborah, Elise, Dominic, John, Jason, Irina, Tony, Michael, Christina, Julie, Brian, Sarah, Arnie, and Barb. Two dozen people that are supporting the podcast monetarily every single month, helping throw a few bucks back in the tip jar, help pay for publishing costs and time and equipment and all that stuff. So thank you so much for being here. Sarah DeKeeley from Brisbane, Australia. She was on the podcast 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago. And then I re-aired her interview very recently. I'm excited for you to listen to her coming back. She has had a hell of a 2025, and she's going to talk about that. If you're interested in any of the stuff that she talks about, the links or the resources or the blog or the Substack, I'm going to put links to all those things in the show notes. You can find them just by clicking on info, depending on what your podcast provider is, and you'll find them in there. So without further ado, here is Sarah DeKeeley from Brisbane and myself chatting it up about 2025 and trauma and emotional pain. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. It's been 4 or 4.5 years, so it's been a while, but I have Sarah DeKeeley with me from Brisbane, Australia, all the way across the pond. It's 3 o'clock where I am, and it's like Friday where you are, right? Do I have that right? And it's not quite that late.
I am in the future, yes, but it is Thursday morning.
My youngest daughter, she'll always ask me, this is really techie and nerdy. We use a VPN to watch some programs that we want to watch. And often we will use VPNs from either Sydney or even Adelaide. And she always says, what time is it in Adelaide? What time is it in Brisbane? What time is it in Sydney? And so I think about you every time that she asks that, which is a lot, because we watch these pro wrestling shows together and they're only available on certain platforms. And only if you use a VPN from out of the country, and we just always have stable connections with Australia. So maybe it's you and me with a connection across the world. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you were on the show in 2021. I actually replayed our interview either last week or the week before. Psychotherapist background. You wrote a book a few years ago. I read that book. Very interesting background. You said, I've been following you on social for years. You said something a couple of weeks ago that really caused me to want to say, hey, would you be open to talking about this a little bit more on the podcast? Now, you recently went through some stuff, and normally on this show, it's like, if it's not interviewing a therapist, it's interviewing somebody who has had some kind of a chronic pain issue, and it sort of adjusts the way that they live life once they kind of learn about mind-body syndrome. This was a little bit different in that you were talking about emotional pain, and I want to talk about, I want to lean in on that. Tell us what's going on or what's been going on.
Well, a lot's happened, and I think, I guess briefly, for many years, I honestly thought that I was doing the work. I had all the tools, all the strategies, and of course, many of those tools and strategies are effective. And I could talk the language of healing pretty much fluently. And I even learned how to look healed, calm, you know, strong, endlessly giving. And I was very good at people pleasing, which is, you know, the common personality trait for people with any kind of mind-body related issue.
Yeah.
And being the person who had it all figured out, and even in my book that I wrote, as much as a lot of what I wrote was about my story and how I guess, healed or took myself through that journey, a lot of it was definitely true. At the time, I don't think I realized that I wasn't still touching what we call that real thing.
Yeah.
Because the work was never about the tools. It was about facing the pain. And it was about being very honest. It was about truth.
Expand on that a little bit, because a lot of people think that the work is that, or it is, or the tools are those things. How do you define a tool in the mind body space? So maybe give some examples, and where was the disconnect or the gap for you?
I think often we look at the tools as, you know, if I just meditate and exercise, and if I just, I don't know, do some whatever therapy or, which is of course effective. I'm not at all, you know, poo-pooing any of that stuff. Even things like, if I just distract myself from it, if I just think of something else, which is commonly recommended and suggested in the field of TMS, just, you know, just, focus on something else, just, you know, think something else. This is safe. It's all good. That would be enough. And of course, it does really help. And it really did help me with a lot of my own symptoms to constantly remind myself that the symptoms I had were safe, that the things I were experiencing were safe. However, I wasn't truthful about what I really actually felt. And I think this is something that often gets bypassed in this field, in this area. We intellectually bypass it, we spiritually bypass it, and I certainly did that, where we just think that, you know, if I just start thinking a certain way, that it's just gonna do the work, yeah, right? It's gonna fix everything. And of course, you can experience relief by doing that, absolutely. But what I experienced was that there was this incredibly crucial component of this work, which is, you know, being very truthful. And that requires you to face your shadow, you know, really face every part of yourself, that then sets you off on, a journey with grief.
Yeah.
Where you have to really sit with a lot of sadness, with a lot of, anger, and confront what you have constantly tried to outrun. And that was what I used to do. You know, I kept outrunning everything.
Are you talking, like when you say sit there with it, are you talking about somatically? Break that down a little bit more.
Yeah, so what happened for me was that because of a lot of things that took place in my life, such as relationship ending, friendships ending, you know, I fractured a part of my body that forced me to really just be still. And I started to really just lose a lot of the things that I was relying on for that sense of safety. And I'm referring to you know, people and even just, yeah, different tools that I had. And what that did was that it forced me to sit with parts of myself that were that felt very unsafe, you know, the anger, the frustration, the, I guess, the abandoned child, the silenced woman,
yeah,
shadowy corners, you know, I kept locked away so I could keep looking good or looking together. And that grief really asked me to confront what was imperfect, you know. It was an honesty. It was the kind of honesty that makes you, you know, your voice shake when you finally say it out loud, that this hurts. I feel lost. I'm angry. I feel abandoned.
Yeah.
And this is when that shift happened, where I started to slowly integrate into what I like to call, you know, just wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely been a journey, and sitting with that, yes, requires somatically being able to sit with that. But also, one of the most powerful things for me was creativity, because I started to write in the midst of that grief and that depression. And I'm talking really honest writing, where everything was out, you know, out in the open. I started a blog and I shared my truth with the whole world to see. And that started to resonate with a lot of people. And it also started to shift something with me within myself, because I started to, you know, embrace everything about myself,
yeah,
the shadowy parts, all the things that I kept dismissing, you know, and kind of distracting from and avoiding. And I see this a lot, even with my clients and people I've worked with, where we're just running to the next, you know, next course, next book, next, it's always just collecting information and collecting tools and strategies, but not really doing the actual work.
Are you comfortable with sharing some of that shadow stuff or any of that? I want to make sure before I ask, yeah, that you're okay with it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's out to the open. Everybody, okay, can go and read it. But I basically wrote a lot about how much I hated my life, how much I hated working even as a therapist,
yeah,
how much I hated always being that space holder for everybody else when nobody was that for me, how much I hated positivity and all the things that I would always project to the world.
Yeah.
And how lonely I felt, how abandoned I felt, how unseen I felt, how, you know, just that pretending was taking such a toll on me. It was taking a toll on my energy. And I always say, when your energy is strong, your physiology naturally follows. But when your energy is weak, because you're not authentic. And I really do understand, now I understand the words of, you know, Dr. Gabor Mate, because he always talks about authenticity and how we betray our authenticity in order to belong. But that authenticity is ultimately, you know, where your power lies. And that's also how you strengthen your physiology.
That makes me think of, so there's a Canadian actor, Jim Carrey. Don't know if you know who he is. There's this video, gosh, I wish that I could. There was this really great like montage video. He was talking about some of this kind of stuff. And one of the concepts that he was getting at was that like people, sort of the more that they age, you know, you're a little tiny little child, you're a toddler or a kid, just an adolescent in general. And like your true self is probably what's out there. You don't have the conditioning. You don't have the things that are telling you to either quiet down or get louder or change this or do that or whatever. And then you become this like awkward teen, and then you go through your 20s and then in your 30s and whatever. And it's like over the course of time, this conditioning, you now kind of look at yourself in the mirror, maybe when you're 40 or whatever. And you just say like, I don't even like, who am I? I don't even know who I am anymore. That's what this is making me think of. There's, yes, lots of people listening to this right now that probably say, oh yeah, that sounds a lot like me. Some of this is intuition, and maybe it's difficult to even teach or talk about, but can you, I mean, what can somebody do that's listening to this right now that's 40 and says, yes, that really resonates with me. How do I even know what my true self is, or my, you know, my authentic self? How can I figure that out?
Yeah, look, I think there was something to what Dr. Sarno talked about in his books about journaling. And I really think he tapped into it himself, where you really start this practice of being consistent and honest and truthful and getting to know yourself on a deeper level. So for me, doing that writing helped me sit with the parts of myself that I've pretty much felt like I had to banish. And, you know, I'm talking, like I said before, the messy, the jealous, the angry, the needy, the terrified parts, all the things about myself that I thought was unlovable. And I realized that, you know, this kind of shadow work, as we call it in therapy, isn't really about fixing these parts or making them disappear. It's about integrating them, welcoming them, you know, because when you go through any kind of trauma in your life, whether it's, you know, the really big stuff or relational trauma, which pretty much everybody goes through, where there's a lack of emotional availability in the household or parents that just didn't have the capacity to regulate their own feelings or model healthy boundaries or just had no idea, right? When you go through that stuff as a child, there's so much that you internalize and there's a fragmentation that takes place. And so you end up disconnecting from and dismissing so many parts of yourself that make you who you are. Mm-hmm. And it's about realizing that wholeness doesn't come from cutting off what's inconvenient. It comes from integration. And some people go, you know, they really go towards that shadow part and they completely become it. You know, they almost live in their darkness. And then there's people who do the opposite, where they just want to be in that happy, positive, I've got it all together, I'm strong, you know, that other, I guess, what we call the light, so to speak. And when I stopped trying to be always the light and started telling the truth about my shadow, something started to shift from within me, because I stopped living for appearances and started living in authenticity. Mm-hmm. And that authenticity has, I guess, created a shift from within me. And it was hard, because when I tell you that I had to sit completely alone, I'm not exaggerating. No family, no friends. I ordered my meals online and they delivered to my home.
Yeah.
I honestly feel like there was almost like a divine orchestration or something that took place, where life was like, okay, Sarah, time for you to just face yourself.
Yeah.
Because when I look at it all now, I just think, how did that even happen, where the person I was madly in love with would just abandon me, and friends who were my best friends would just disappear and no longer want to be around me, because I was starting to speak my truth more. And because I was at the lowest point in my life. And yeah, there was just so much that felt a little bit like, this stuff isn't just everyday stuff. Why would something like that happen? It's got to be for a reason. It was very much a rock bottom chapter.
Yeah. I'm curious, what about, and maybe you don't have the direct answer to this, and that's fine. Maybe it's more of a guess, but people that did kind of turn away as you did start speaking more about your truth, what was it about that that made people uncomfortable enough that they turned away?
Great question. It's because you're holding up a mirror to what they don't want to see within themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to face those parts of themselves. So when they see you actually doing that, it just triggers something within them. And it's very terrifying. I mean, this stuff takes courage. It's not something everybody can do. You know, if you really want to get to this place of feeling more whole and authentic, you have to be courageous. There's just no way around it. It's really the hero's journey, as Joseph Campbell, you know, wrote about it.
It's really funny you say that. I'm going to a baseball game tonight with a guy who I run a TMS page with, and he described TMS as the hero's journey. He told me that 6 years ago, 6 or 7 years ago. So it's funny that you say that you describe it in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, because it really is, because TMS is really so fear-based. It's all about this fear, and yet underneath that fear, there is freedom, because you kind of get to a point where you just say, this is who I am, you know, this is what hurts, this is what I long for, this is what I can't tolerate anymore, this is what I hate, and this is my truth, and you just stop people-pleasing, you stop pretending, you know, this is... where I guess for me, creativity became my lifeline, because, you know, I started to really use that writing and also the painting, because I paint. I used to paint things that would make everybody feel happy. But then through this process, I started to paint what I truly felt. And some of it was just, you know, not so colorful, yeah. Not so happy. And interestingly enough, going through this process actually got me to a place of feeling happier. I mean, for me, happiness is, you know, is a state of mind, yes, but it's also something that you go in and out of. But doing this work has helped me to just kind of really embrace that happiness so much more, that joy, because I was able to sit with that pain,
yeah,
embrace the pain, listen to the pain, hear it, be honest about it. And I think also one of the errors in this field that I work in, you know, therapy and coaching and any of this kind of work, is that often people get dismissed when they start to go into that space. They get told, yeah, you just need to shift the way you think about it, you just need to look at it differently. You know, you just need to breathe. You just need to do this. You just need to do that. There aren't many people who actually have done this work themselves, who can just sit with someone's pain and mm-hmm. just be like, yeah, that freaking sucks.
Yeah.
And then this is it. Like, there's no fixing it. It's just, let's just be with this for a second, mm-hmm. you know?
What is sort of the, I guess, like, what's kind of the outlook for you now? Because how long ago did kind of all this begin, by the way?
Not long ago at all.
Yeah.
I actually started this stuff this year.
Yeah, like just within the last few months, I think, right?
Well, it started in the beginning of this year.
Okay.
So I would say, yeah, just like, what, 7, 8 months now?
Okay. So what's different for you? Because things are going to happen, right? Things are going to, I imagine your website is, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's, is it mentalawakening.com.au as in Australia,
yes.
Right?
That's right.
Yeah. I imagine this is not the last sort of awakening that you'll have as time goes on.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of a regular practice or anything? I mean, you talked about like doing a lot of like sitting by yourself, doing a lot of writing, all that stuff, particularly in the beginning. And I think you're a regular artist, like a regular painter, but what sorts of things from here on out, let's just say over the next 6 months to a year, do you think that you'll be doing in like regular intervals or maybe a regular practice mm-hmm. of some kind, or is there anything?
Well, definitely the creativity part of it has really become incredibly important to me. It's mm-hmm. become my lifeline, you know, because that became my medicine. You know, when the ache is really heavy, I just write, right? And paint. And it gave me a way to tell the truth when my voice couldn't. So through painting, that's what I do. And through writing, of course, I got closer to the truth of my voice, because sometimes, you know, actually talking it out or expressing it is just really difficult
yeah.
and scary. And so writing and painting was a rebellion in many ways against that silence. It was me facing the pain, honoring my shadow, and finding the beauty in that mess. And I feel like that grief, facing that grief, has dismantled me, but I guess also reassembled me in some ways, you know, because it was very honest and very alive. And it taught me that authenticity is not optional. It's the only path forward. And creativity has kind of given me this courage to walk it, which is what I now do. You know, I've started on my blog. I also have, an offering where people can join me in this process. And I share whatever it is that I go through every week and how I use this medicine to hold that pain and transform it. Sometimes I can't transform it. Sometimes it's just about holding it. And that's what I do now, because I realize that grief requires witnessing. You know, sometimes just doing all this stuff on your own isn't going to shift anything. It's really about being able to have others that can witness you in what you're going through and still kind of, you know, not judge you and, and be like, yeah, it's all good. Right. So that's, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's where I'm at and that's what's helped me. Yeah.
How often are you writing right now?
I write daily.
Do you set a timer? Do any of that?
Yes. Initially I didn't, but then it became, you know, so holy, such a holy experience, because I started to feel something, you know, waking up from inside of me. I was really depressed. I had no energy to do anything. And the writing helped me connect to my anger and my rage, which then gave me the motivation to just want to show up for it more and more. And so I started to, you know, just do it consistently every day, wake up, have a coffee, go to a cafe or at home and just write for a few hours. I did, for 100 days, I did 4 hours of writing per day. Jeez. But that was because I was quite, you know, I just really went for it. Mm-hmm. There was nothing else that I could lean on, nobody else that I could lean on.
Yeah.
And the other thing that also I started doing was seeing a grief therapist, which helped me because, like I said before, there's something really powerful in being held and witnessed with what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that we don't have enough of that in, you know, in our world. I find grief therapy to be incredibly powerful. I'm actually running an online workshop on grief therapy myself coming up this month, because I see so many people constantly grieving something.
Yeah.
You know, and there's going to be so much more of it as we move into the future. Because if you look at young people today, there's so much dissociation.
Yeah.
And so that stuff is going to catch up with you eventually.
People want to go to your website and they want to check you out. Where should they go? And I know I just said it a second ago, but where should they go?
That's okay. So mentalawakening.com.au is my psychotherapy website. I also am on Substack. So Substack, if for those of you who don't know about it,
I need to be, because I keep hearing all these people that I really love listening to talk about their Substack. And yes. I need to just go do it. I need to go do it.
Well, let's just say Substack is where people go to be authentic.
Excellent.
And on Substack, I have a newsletter called Woman Unraveling, the Diary of a Woman Unraveling. And that's where you can find me. And that's where you can find my weekly offering, where you can journal and paint with me and a few other things that are coming, because it's a constant evolving thing.
I just found it. I will link to it in the show notes. Thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure. I'll keep my eye on you over the next few months and watch some of the stuff that you put out, but thank you for being here.
Thanks, Eddie. Good to be here.